The GI Research Foundation was able to produce this podcast with a generous sponsorship from Metro Infusion Centers. Welcome to Visceral, a podcast of the GI Research Foundation. I'm your host, Anna Gomberg, and today we're speaking with a very special and important person, Dr. Candace Champ. To understand why she's so important, I want us to know a little bit about how science is done in academic settings. In academic settings like the University of Chicago, research programs or scientific investigations into a specific area of study, those are typically set up by principal investigators, who are usually faculty at the university. These principal investigators, or PIs, set up labs, which are not just the test tubes and Bunsen burners and beakers and things that you might remember from your high school classrooms, but mostly labs are people. Those people conduct research, collect patient samples, run analyses, analyze data, and compile reports, and they really create all the things that go into a successful scientific experiment. Dr. Candace Champ is the program manager for the Chang Lab at the University of Chicago, and she is the scientist who oversees much of the laboratory research conducted on the microbiome with Jean Chang, the scientific advisor for the GI Research Foundation, and previous podcast guest. Today, we're going to speak with Dr. Champ about the ongoing investigations into the microbiome, particularly in the less-than-ideal American diet, which we all enjoy. And we're going to learn a little bit more about how scientists investigate specific ways that we can make minor changes into our diet that will impact our health. Candace, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm so excited to talk to you. Can you tell me a little bit about the project that the GI Research Foundation funded and what you'll be investigating?
Yeah, thank you, Annie. And thank you so much for the invitation. I'm really excited to talk to you about my project. We were brainstorming about, you know, how can we improve the health of someone who, you know, really likes their Western diet, and or maybe some people just don't have the luxury of eating, you know, healthier. And so how can we, you know, help these kinds of people? And so
maybe before we even go any further, what is the Western diet? What do we mean by that?
A Western diet, it's low in fiber, high in fat, ultra processed foods. You know, you might like visit your favorite fast food chain and you get, you know, fries and a burger, for example. So that is sort of how we classify as a Western diet.
It sounds a lot like my diet and the diet of my children and the foods that they will accept as food. But I know that this is also the food that is everywhere in America. And this is part of what America has exported to the rest of the world. So we're then seeing changes in those regions' diets that seem to be impacting people's health. So that's very interesting. And so it would be great if there was something that people could consume that would maybe offset some of that. Is that the direction that the research was going?
Yes. So that is the goal, is, okay, so someone loves their Western diet. Can they take a pill once a day and maybe reap some benefits of, you know, this supplement? So our thought is that Western diet feeds the microbiota that's in our gut that may not be as beneficial to our bodies as some of the other commensal bacteria that are in our guts that help regulate our body systems. And so the rationale for taking these supplements would be to try to feed those commensal bacteria that do regulate our body systems that would normally be reduced by somebody who's taking a Western diet.
So if I eat chicken nuggets, I end up with microbiota that are chicken nugget microbiota. And if I eat kale salads, I end up with microbiota that are kale salad microbiota. So this is the idea, is that those good, for lack of a better term, and not, probably we don't want to call food good or bad, but the food that is going to be perhaps more productive for our microbiome would be fed by a supplement. Is that what the vision of the study was, is to think, and then maybe what does do they outcompete the other Western diet microbiota, or do they fight? How does that work?
I mean, I think that both of those are possible. It's probably dependent on how much of the supplement you take and how much of, your diet is Western diet. So it's probably not all black and white. I'm sure there's a sliding scale, but that is basically the premise of, what we're thinking is that you need to feed the microbes that will process the ingredients that are in the supplements that they would normally be getting if someone were to eat a more high fiber, low in fat diet. So then you would promote the growth or promote the survival of those commensal bacteria that would then produce the good products that would help regulate our body.
And how did you decide on the supplement that you were going to use for the study?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting question, Annie, because our original proposal was to use a fiber called inulin, which is commercially available. You can buy it at the drugstore.
Inulin is a brand name, or is that
It's a
the
type of fiber,
type of
actually.
fiber?
Yeah, actually, it's sort of the active ingredient that would be in Activia, for example, the yogurt. So that's our original proposal was to use inulin. However, Eugene Chang, IPI, he suggested that perhaps inulin would be, not as exciting and novel because a lot of studies have been conducted using inulin, and there are a lot of benefits. What's less known is like some other kinds of supplements. And so one of those kinds of supplements is called human milk oligosaccharides.
Can you just tell me a little bit about what those are?
Yeah. So human milk oligosaccharides are basically the simple sugars that are in human milk. So any type of milk has these oligosaccharides. Saccharides is a long word that basically means a sugar, and oligo means it's several molecules of sugar that are bound together. And these oligosaccharides are used by microbes as energy and nutrients that promote their own growth. So what Jean suggested was for us, rather than to use inulin, is to use a combination of different kinds of HMOs to help promote certain types of bacteria, namely bifidobacteria. And bifidobacteria is a kind of commensal bacteria that has been shown to be very helpful in the gut.
I'm sorry, this is probably very, very basic, but you're using the phrase commensal bacteria. What exactly is a commensal bacteria?
People normally think that bacteria are harmful, but commensal bacteria are the bacteria that are living in our intestine, and they are not harmful to us. And in fact, they're beneficial to us because they help us digest our food. They actually make essential vitamins that our bodies cannot make. We feed these commensal bacteria with the food that we eat, and in turn, they provide molecules that our bodies respond to.
These are like the pets that live in our intestines that we take care of every day, huh? With
That's
the
right.
different things that we eat, the commensal bacteria. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense to me. So we're going to offer them these HMOs, see what happens. What is the study design like? How do we test this in the lab?
Yeah, so we have actually two parts to this grant proposal. One part is a human study where we are going to recruit anyone who self-proclaims themselves to be on a Western diet and typically enjoys a Western diet maybe at least 4 to 5 times a week. And then we will ask them to take this supplement once a day. They just put it in coffee, drinking water, and then they just drink it. They take it once a day and take it for 28 days. And what we're going to do is we're going to see whether or not there is a beneficial effect to having taken this supplement for 28 days straight.
That's amazing to me that in 28 days you could change something as important as your intestinal microbiome. Is that how quickly the we would anticipate that those changes would happen that quickly?
On one hand, the microbiome is quite stable. On the other hand, we are introducing something new that perhaps the subjects are not eating on a regular basis. So I think we hope that we will be able to see some positive changes in the metabolites that the bacteria are making, as well as maybe the abundance of the more commensal of these commensal bacteria.
What listeners of this podcast will know that we've talked about metabolites before, and metabolites as the byproduct of the activity of the microbiome. That can have systemic effects and can be important for our health.
Prior to the start of the supplement, we are asking the subjects to provide a stool sample so that we can analyze their microbes and the levels of metabolites and the kinds of metabolites that are present in their stool before they start on the supplement. And then after they complete the regimen of 28 days of supplementation, then we'll ask for another stool sample and we will do the same types of analysis where we're looking at how the metabolites have changed, do the levels of metabolites change, and maybe is there a change in the types of bacteria that are present in their stool. I'm also getting ready to do an animal study
Oh, great.
so that we can do these two studies in parallel. So the advantage of using mice and giving them the supplement is that we know what we are giving them to eat, and we can control, as many aspects of their diet as we can, as opposed to a human who, may not be eating the same thing every single day.
They may go rogue and start eating kale salads, and you'll have no idea if it's
Exactly.
the effect of the kale salads or the supplement itself. That's so very, very interesting. And of course, you would do things. It makes, of course, a lot of sense given that so many of these studies, of course, have animal components as well as human components for the very reason that you stated. How is it different working with the GI Research Foundation on a study like this compared to working, as I know you work with Gene and with others on these very large scale grants with the National Institute of Health and even the Digestive Disease Research Core Center. We have a lot of different ways that we fund research here. How is working with the GI Research Foundation different?
The support that the GI Research Foundation gives us is extremely important and so helpful because when we apply for grants, to an agency like the NIH, they require preliminary data and in order to be successfully funded. And without money, it's hard to generate preliminary data. And so it would be in this day and age very impossible for us to come up with enough money to be able to produce preliminary data to be able to write the NIH for a larger study. So The money that we get from the GI Research Foundation enables us to show that we have proof of concept, that there is promise for this type of study, and that once we have the preliminary data, then we will be able to apply for a larger grant
That's
at
awesome.
the NIH.
How is, in general, the microbiome important for our health, or what have you learned about that in your ongoing research in this area?
Well, before I came to this lab, I really didn't have any idea about the gut microbiome at all. And it wasn't until I started working in this lab did I even understand that there's so many far-reaching effects of the gut microbiome outside of the intestine. It has, as an immune As a person who has studied immunology, I was really surprised to find out that the gut microbiome has an ex a profound influence on the way that our immune system develops, especially as, from the day that we are born, and the immune system is developing, and so is the gut microbiome, and they sort of coordinate hand in hand. And what our gut microbiome looks like as infants or as young people will could have long-lasting effects, into adulthood.
Absolutely.
So it's really incredible.
Yeah. Well, and we are finding out more and more about the way that it relates to certain disease states and certain types of difficulties and disorders of our digestive system, but also just in general. So I think the more we are learning about this, the more interesting it becomes. Is there anything else I haven't asked that we should know about this research? And when can we check back with you to see how it worked out? What's your timeline?
Well, the timeline is the grant is for 1 year, so hopefully by the middle of next year we should be able to have some preliminary data.
Awesome.
I'm just so thankful for the GI Research Foundation for supporting this type of funding. To support our study, actually, it's I think if it works, if we find that these supplement that the supplementation on top of a Western diet has beneficial effects, I think this will be big news, and it will help a lot of people.
That's wonderful. And that would be great, especially for my children and all of our American children who definitely would benefit from being able to maybe enhance their diet in some way someday. Thank you so much. Go ahead. Sorry,
I
go
was,
ahead.
yeah, so I was just gonna say, like, the HMOs is really, just one candidate supplement. There are many other types of supplements that we're
Sure.
thinking about. This is just the beginning, and if we see a little bit of a positive effect, maybe we could combine it with some other supplements, and maybe in the future you could be taking a pill that has multiple ingredients in it that will, be optimally beneficial for somebody who's on a Western diet or even who has a healthier diet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we've learned that dietary change is really difficult, and even measuring dietary change is really difficult. So the idea that this is something that is a lighter lift, perhaps, and something that is easier to monitor, I think makes a lot of sense too.
Yeah, and I think part of this study came about because, we know a lot of people struggle with, staying on a diet. They know that they should eat healthier, but for whatever reason, whatever personal reason there is, they struggle, and it's very hard for people to change their lifestyle or, to learn how to eat better. Maybe they didn't grow up eating healthy and they don't know where to start. We know there are lots of challenges, and so we're just trying to think of a simple solution for that would help improve the health of a lot of people.
It's really great. It would be wonderful to have elegant solutions to even complex problems. So, thank you so much, Dr. Cham.
Today's episode is made possible by Metro Infusion Centers. Metro Infusion Centers, with over 220 infusion centers nationwide, providing trusted and life-saving therapies to patients for over 30 years in a comfortable and cost-effective environment. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast Visceral from the GI Research Foundation. This episode was written, edited, and produced by me, Anna Gomberg, and edited and mixed by Luke Pahalski. Special thanks to the talented Michael Collins Dowden, who composed our theme music, and executive producer Allison Thielen. We hope you will join us next time, and until then, to access other podcasts and learn more about research to treat, prevent, and cure digestive diseases, please visit the website at giresearchfoundation.org. Please like and subscribe to Visceral on all your favorite podcast platforms, and until next time, listen to your gut.